From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. Brooke Gladstone is away this week. I'm Bob Garfield.
Everybody got hurt.
Major financial institutions have teetered on the edge of collapse, and some have failed.
A decade ago came two watershed moments in the history of money. In September 08, the bankruptcy of Lehman Brothers triggered a financial meltdown from which the world has yet to fully recover. The following month, someone using the name Satoshi Nakamoto introduced Bitcoin, the first cryptocurrency.
A peer-to-peer electronic cash system.
Bitcoin transactions have no middleman.
There's no government and no central bank controlling the supply of Bitcoin.
Some say 2008 marked the end of the old world financial order and the beginning of the new. Before our eyes, the very architecture of money was evolving, changing the world in the process. But how? What architecture are we talking about exactly? And what the hell is money anyway?
Millions of dollars pouring into the hands of the American worker.
Money. $1.04.
My first payday.
Yeah, of course, money is many things. It's how we buy our groceries and how we manage the global economy and how we keep score of success. It's how we're compensated for labor and risk. It's a token of exchange for valuation, for obligation, and maybe most of all, trust. But on top of everything else, or more precisely, at the bottom of it all, is the reason this particular set of 10th anniversaries falls within the bailiwick of On the Media. Money, in any form, is the connective tissue of society, a medium for our relationships, past, present, and future. It is humanity's never-ending narrative.
Money is a story that we all tell ourselves.
Neha Narula is the director of the Digital Currency Initiative at MIT's Media Lab.
You know, there's nothing inherently valuable about a dollar bill or a coin that you keep in your pocket or even a bar of gold. Those things have value because we know that other people think that they have value. Money is a network where we all collectively have decided that we're going to use it to represent value.
A collective belief is not to be dismissed. You've seen Peter Pan. It's how a dying fairy called Tinkerbell is brought back to life.
If you believe, wherever you are, clap your hands and she'll hear you. Clap! Clap! Don't let Tink die! Clap! She's getting better. Clap! Clap!
Hold that thought. Before too long, you'll be hearing about Tinkerbell again. In this hour, first broadcast last fall, we look at the story of money, from its uncertain origins to its digital reinvention in the form of cryptocurrency, which may simultaneously reform global commerce and blow the foundations of modern society to smithereens. But we'll begin in a curious place with an artist, a man who made a global reputation and an incredible legal ruckus searching for the meaning of money.
My name is Boggs, B-O-G-G-S.
J.S.G. Boggs was an artist whose technical genius was drawing uncanny replicas of paper currency and using them to purchase goods and services. You could call it counterfeiting, except nobody ever thought that they were accepting legal tender. They were accepting a signed, hand-drawn Boggs. This is from a 1992 documentary, Money Man, J.S.G. Boggs.
I started drawing and spending my money in 1984. I was a poor, starving artist, as they say, when I found myself in Chicago, in a cafe, doodling on a napkin. The waitress came over and said the drawing looked like a $1 bill and asked if she could buy it from me. So when she came back with the check for my coffee, it was for 90 cents, I offered her the drawing as payment. She took it and insisted I take 10 cents in change. So I framed the dime and hung it on the wall. And that's how it all started.
He followed this same ritual for almost three decades, and now his work is displayed in Chicago's Art Institute, the British Museum, and the Smithsonian. By the time of his 2017 death, he'd drawn bills totaling more than $1 million based on their denominations as art pieces, which include the original sketch, the receipt, and the cash change. They've gone on to fetch an untold fortune in the open market. His art, he emphasized, was not a drawing per se, but the entire transaction. Here he is explaining it to a coffee house manager.
Excuse me. The waiter just brought this to my attention. I understand that you wanted to pay for your check with this bill here.
Yes. Yes, I made this $100 note myself.
It's very nice.
It's not actually real currency, and it's not counterfeit currency. It's actually a work of art.
Such radical transparency has a proud history in 20th century art. In his most famous work, Belgian painter René Magritte depicted a curvy briar pipe with the caption in script, "This is not a pipe," because it was, of course, merely a picture of a pipe. The treachery of images, Magritte called the painting. Bog's entire body of work toyed with such treachery by similarly disclosing his authorship of his remarkable facsimiles. Lacking any intrinsic worth, a Boggs had value only if he could persuade someone to believe it's valuable. This is what behavioral economists and others call, yes, the Tinkerbell effect. The value resides entirely in mass belief, just like money.
He's one of these people who, you know, like in the cartoon, you walk over the cliff, you keep walking, and he says, will you please look down? Nothing is holding us up.
Lawrence Weschler, who followed the artist's exploits for 30 years, is the author of Boggs, A Comedy of Values.
Except the most marvelous thing of all, which is this community of belief that we have and the way in which value is negotiated at every moment between human beings in a truly mystifying and marvelous and delightful and at times terrifying fashion.
The marveling at money's mysteries hardly began with Boggs. Here's a 1947 school instructional film tracing the path of a single $5 bill.
After school, the $5 bill goes to a hardware store where Tom uses it to buy the paint. This is one of the most common ways in which we all use money, as a medium of exchange for goods. Tom exchanges a certain amount of money for a gallon of paint. The clerk naturally accepts the money, and he gives Tom a smaller amount of money in change.
Exactly like a Boggs transaction, even the ones that never happened due to that hard-hearted portion of the population unwilling to believe in Tinkerbell.
Good morning. May I help you?
Yes. Can you tell me the price of those bookends in the window?
Yes, that pair is $8.75, and most attractive.
I'm afraid that's more than I care to spend.
The movie spoke less with authority than bemusement over a system so invested in mere tokens or totems, a mystery which, Weschler observes, mankind has been trying to get to the bottom of for at least 2,600 years.
The pre-Socratic philosophers on islands in the Ionian Sea, where there are mines and the mines are turning their stuff into coins. And the question they're asking is, what is the meaning of value? How is it possible that this piece of stone is worth something in relation to this cow over here? And why does that man have all those stones? And what is really of value? And within a few generations, you have Socrates asking that as the main question of philosophy. What does it mean to have a valuable life?
Such weighty musings are the sort of thing that landed Boggs' work in the British Museum. Which is kind of ironic because before that, his work was scrutinized by Britain's Central Criminal Court for illegal reproduction of British currency. Boggs, in the dock of the Old Bailey, persuaded a jury that no, the British notes rolling off of Her Majesty's printing presses, they were reproductions. His drawings were originals. There, he prevailed. However, he was less fortunate with the United States Secret Service because, as 1947 school kids learned, imitation is the sincerest form of felony.
So today in the United States, any money is counterfeit and so worthless unless issued by the federal government. And anyone who knowingly tries to spend counterfeit money may be fined a large amount and sent to jail.
The Secret Service never prosecuted Boggs, but did spend many millions of actual U.S. dollars investigating him, harassing him, and fighting him in civil court, confiscating more than 1,000 items of his drawings and other property along the way. Then a U.S. federal judge ruled that the Secret Service was within its rights to take fake money out of circulation. And Boggs says Rentschler was broken. A man who had spent much of his early childhood as a carny, helping in cheerful flimflams, and who had devilishly poked at the law in the name of art, took the philosophy of value, shall we say, to the next level.
What happened in the case of Boggs is I never was sure whether he was interested in money or interested in transgression, and fascinated by transgression. And after this complete defeat by the government where they wouldn't give him his stuff back, he got interested in another form of money, which was, he noticed, the fastest way of turning crap into money was a meth lab.
If the goal of art at some level is to locate truth, my take is that Boggs came about as close as any artist I can think of for getting to the truth of money.
Yeah. I would argue that that's exactly true. And that the truth of money is that it is an endless perplex. It is endlessly confounding.
Coming up, what is money? Or more to the point, what isn't it? This is On the Media.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.